This is Heather Neal for Theatre Voice at the Arcola Theatre in North London, where Helena Kauthausen is directing Innocence by German playwright Dea Loher. Helena's with me now to talk about this play by a writer much better known in Europe than in the UK. Helena trained at the Polish Academy of Theatre in Warsaw as well as at RADA and has directed extensively both theatre and opera in Europe as well as here. Between 1991 and 1995, she was artistic director at Theatre Clwyd in Wales, where productions included The Rose Tattoo, for which she won Best Director in the 1995 TMA Regional Theatre Awards. Other awards include Grand Prix for the Best Director at the 2003 Festival of Premieres Rocks Love in Poland. Well, I've introduced you, Helena, as very much a European, and you've actually just told me that you discovered this play, Innocence, by reading a particular magazine, so you keep in touch with what's happening in Europe.
Yes, I am umbilically connected to Europe, and mainly, and this is like an advertisement for that magazine, there is a Polish monthly called Dialogue, really, which is one of the many publications on theatre, because theatre is still very high profile there. And I read translations and essays there, and I found that play there in 2004, so quite a while ago, when she wrote it, when it first came out. But already then it was considered her best. The moment it came out, it was considered really an important play. She has written since, but this is a premiere of her work here. No, premiere of this particular play, that's most definitely British, yes. English language play.
But she's not very well known here, is she?
Although I know that the Royal Court has done readings, so tiptoeing around her. So they are aware of her status. But like most of their work with international repertoire, it's more a kind of token. Really curtsy towards it rather than a real attempt to represent it here. I think she's important, you know, whether one likes the work or not. She's important because she's a trendsetter, even though she herself avoids trends. I mean, it kind of not only shows where theatre is going in Europe, but also shows very important changes in the thinking about what theatre is in modern society. I feel it's a very much a 21st century play.
Yes. Well, she was born in 1964 in Bavaria, wasn't she? And she's won many awards in Germany.
It's quite established.
And she's widely performed there. So what would you say is distinctive about her voice?
She's very original in that she actually doesn't follow any trends. She's not political in an ostensible way. She's not pro-Brechtian. If anything, she continues, albeit unconsciously, a trend that perhaps, I don't know if it was started, but best exemplified in Buchner, for instance, in the Wojciech, plays built of short scenes, vaguely, loosely connected, and representing a view of reality. You see, that's 18th century play. That's a tradition, really, in German theatre, of those plays which kind of look at reality as it were, from the point of view of a fly, you know, the character mentioned, you know, so seeing many pictures and putting them together and creating a new view of reality. Yeah.
Well, perhaps we should just say a little bit about what happens in Innocence. It was written in 2003, and it's made up of separate scenes about people who at first seem unrelated, but many of whose lives interweave. It begins with two illegal immigrants in an unspecified town, probably in Germany, though.
I mean, I thought it was Hamburg, but then I spoke to Dea Loher, and she says, no, nothing is really very specific.
So right.
It's a Western city, and the sea is imaginary, really, as well.
So they're watching these two illegal immigrants as a woman goes into the sea, and they see that she may be in danger, but as they discuss what they should do about it, it becomes too late. They realise that if they move to help her, it may affect their situation and she disappears. So are they guilty? They feel guilt, should they? Other characters include a childless woman who searches out those whose loved ones have been murdered or have died in terrorist attacks, and she claims to be the mother of the criminals. And a philosopher who's written about the unreliability of the world but burns her own books. An undertaker who brings corpses home, whose diabetic mother, his wife's mother, tyrannizes the household, and whose wife is longing for a child. And there's a blind pole dancer with whom one of the immigrants falls in love. Well, that all sounds quite absurdist, but it doesn't really come over like that, does it?
No, I think it comes over like life, really, doesn't it? I think what I find most interesting, and perhaps that's also challenging about her work, that she doesn't look for stories. She doesn't look for a narrative. In fact, she mistrusts narratives. She mistrusts narratives as something misleading that enslaves us, that seduces us and enslaves us. So in a way, you could say it's trying to find another link between reality and the way it's represented in art, in a way forcing us to revise and rethink the stories we are told, or the stories we even write our own destinies into.
Yeah, so that's interesting, because one does get a sense that people are not in control, that they are without any sense of being able to decide what will happen to them,
yes.
Except, of course, for the suicide, so we're the only ones who take one action,
yes.
Which they know the outcome of.
Yes. And in a way, although the play, doesn't have any message or anything like this, and in a way it really just challenges preconceptions, there's a kind of curiously optimistic, did you feel, a curiously optimistic feeling about it. It's not a dismal and pessimistic play. There is a feeling that those people somehow, that there are links between, there is a meaning, but perhaps it's hidden and we should be a little bit more open to searching it out rather than accept given meanings. And also that perhaps we were entitled to dreams which are strong, and we're entitled to, well, I don't know, there is no message. I'm sure she would say, no, she doesn't want a message. It's just the way she presents it all and the way it forces us to review things that is so, I think, thrilling, really. It's just, we are so used to looking for a narrative, looking for a story. What's the story about?
Yes.
And this is a play of ideas.
And rounded characters, right. Whereas these are not really.
Well, they are characters, but they're also mythical in many ways. Absolute,
yes.
For
yes.
instance, or the two immigrants like Candide, really, or like Alice in Wonderland. They kind of stand for more than. It is, I would describe it as a philosophical fable, the piece.
Uh-huh.
Is like Candide, for instance.
Right.
Or like Alice in Wonderland.
And yet the philosopher in it seems almost more lost than
everybody
else. Yes,
because the philosopher represents humanities as they were 19th and 20th century, and as they capitulated to science and enterprise and economy and politics. They capitulated now. She mentions that occasionally few philosophers appear on a chat show to show the audience what. But humanities as such capitulated, no longer an overview that is based on the development of Western thought over the centuries, that there is a progress, that we're going to some liberal democracies and we know how to control our life or something.
Yes.
All
so
that has collapsed.
Thinking too much has driven her mad almost.
Well,
it?
I think that no, she's angry. She's just
right.
Angry that all that collapsed. So it's her rage.
Uh-huh.
It's her rage, really.
And she takes it out on her husband.
On her husband, yes. It shows also the other side, yes, that people who are too involved with intellectual kind of concepts neglect their personal life. So her own life is an example of that.
Yes.
There's a kind of general sense of capitulation. It's a funny play. That's really what I like about it, that nothing is presented with a poker face. It's all ironic, really, and lyrical as well, I thought. There's a kind of rage and lyricism which combine together to make it non-political, really.
Yes. Well, you mentioned Absolute. She's the blind pole dancer. Is there anything significant about her name?
Yes, of course. Well, Absolute is the completeness, is something you do not question. But there is irony in that too, because she is, none of those characters, although they are convincing, they are not really real. They are constructs, and her parents were blind, and they made sure that her DNA showed that she would be born blind, because that was the perfect world. And maybe that was an irony I remember hearing of a case of deaf people wanting their child to be deaf because they felt their culture and their world were perfect. And this is taking it one step further. So she, they felt this was a perfect world. But she also exemplifies something, a kind of perfection, which people strive for. And then again, there is an irony that a perfection, a perfect existence, a dream for a blind, beautiful blind woman would be to be a pole dancer. What else is there? That's the kind of contract she has with yes. male part of humanity.
And then she has the chance to have an operation too.
And the operation fails.
Yes. And she's pleased.
Well, yes, it proves her point.
Yes.
I mean, it is a funny play, really. Yes, it really is like Candide. Everything is challenged.
Right.
Yes, yes. It is a philosophical tale where the philosopher is rather like Pandulf. Pandulf, is it? The philosopher who says, we live in the best of worlds. Yes. Well, the philosopher here says, our world has prostrated itself before the market and the globalism, etc. So it's really a fable for our times.
You mentioned that the sea was mythical as well.
Yes, it represents a kind of destiny, and they look into it. And they immediately use metaphors and language of, you say, that the future looks at you with eyeless.
Yes, I wondered if the young woman who goes into the sea at the beginning was, as it were, metaphorically drowned by her marriage and her home situation.
Possibly. You know, this is another of the one of those mysteries in the play that she is there, and yet we see her soon that she's not. So is it some sort of projection forward, or is it her sense of being ready for suicide? And then at the end we see her again, and it's actually possibly she's not committing suicide, but maybe just going for a swim.
Yes.
You know? So she's going into the future. That's what the writer tells us.
Yes.
No, it questions everything.
And by then she's taking an action, which we're pleased to see she can take, because she's in control of something.
Yes.
Because she seems buffeted by the others.
Yes.
But the character who plays her mother, the character of her mother played by Anne Mitchell, is an extraordinary person, beautifully over-the-top played.
Yes, wonderful. I love she's a communist.
Yes.
That's the first thing about her, and a battle axe, and they're wonderfully full of beans, although she's losing her limbs gradually.
Yeah.
I think in many ways it's a German play expressing indirectly the German or Central European predicament, because you see there that there's a kind of vitality there that is suppressed, held back. And she represents an ideology which is in full swing and yet undermined by her diabetes, of course. And she's full of energy, but she can do nothing, so she can continue.
And she's completely without sympathy for the younger people.
No, none, because they are lifeless.
Her son-in-law brings his work home. His work happens to be laying out corpses. So, now what's going on there?
He brings urns. I kind of thought it would be fun if he brings the bodies. Why not? You know.
And it gives a nice opportunity to the youth theatre here. Some of whom are corpses.
And it makes it all the more explicit that he can handle the bodies of the dead, but he cannot relate to the living, vibrant body of his wife.
Yes.
She's undressing in front of him, and he doesn't see her.
Yes.
He actually says he has no compassion, no real compassion.
Yes. Yes, poor woman.
Poor man as well.
Well, yes, that's true. You said that De Alloa is... questions of theatrical stereotypes and conventions, but it is a very much a theatrical play, isn't it? It's determined to be theatre and to keep reminding you that it's
theatre. I think she's wonderfully of the theatre. She has got a wonderful sense of theatre. She just questions our, well, I think still 19th century theatrical convention that a shotgun in Act 1 has got to fire in Act 3, those kind of conventions. You know? But I think, you know, Chekhov, whom I adore, when he first wrote his plays, people said, they're not about anything. You know, they wouldn't produce it even. Nothing happens.
Yes.
Nothing happens. People eat soup, you know, and then army marches off, you know. And now we consider them classics and classically structured, etc. I think it's the same thing with anything that moves our perception of what theatre is about forward, you know, that her work now seems about no clear narrative. Yeah. Interesting. I mean, I shouldn't put him in the thing, but I remember when I found the play, I thought it's a wonderful play, should be done. Wonderful because it's sort of a milestone, really. And in a way, I think international theatre, I mean, both actors and writers are hungry for a new language, new theatrical language, and that there's something about British theatre that makes it so slow to adopt anything that comes from outside, except for if it's Anglo-Saxon, you know, American.
Yeah.
So slow. And say the Royal Court, whose brief it is to do new world drama, not just English, but new international drama. And look, where are they with it? It's just tokenism, really. There isn't enough happening, and therefore writers don't have, there isn't a lively exchange and new templates that open.
And yet many of our new writers, like Martin Krimp, say, are produced abroad, especially in Germany, aren't they?
Yes, because there is a movement. They are very interested in what happens here, but we are not interested with what's it. It's a one-way traffic.
Yeah.
They are so open, so they use what comes from here. Yeah. They use everything. But I think, I'm not necessarily a fan of German theatre as such. I mean, I see quite a lot of other theatres. I just think that here, not enough is being done of that. And I mean, I wanted to do that play a while ago. So I was told, you know, by people who should know better, that, yes, it's interesting, but it's dramaturgically unsound. You know?
What exactly did they mean by that?
Well, ask Dominic Cook. the narratives don't... The narrative does not... You know, the stories...
Oh, I see.
The thing that makes it strong,
it doesn't...
The stories don't really...
There's a lot of text in it, isn't there? Very long
Very
speeches.
Very poetic, even. Yes. Yeah. Poetic language. Yeah. I mean, she actually... For instance, we were trying to decide, do they, like in English theatre, which is really overweight by realism and naturalism, even though people play with structure, but it's not realistic. And so we thought, do they speak with regional accents, or do they... No, it's a poetic drama, and they really speak...
And yet... you have cast two black actors for the black
I think
part,
simply
because she says that's not necessary,
no,
doesn't she?
No, but I think that this place is too conservative to cast white actors, you know what I mean? There would be a rebellion if I cast...
Ah, yes. So
I wanted to cast white actors.
Ah, right.
But they would. Not, we're not ready yet to cast white actors as black.
Ah, I see.
You know what I mean?
That would be progress, wouldn't it?
Yes.
But I suppose there are so few roles for black actors still.
That's why they would
rebel against that,
yes,
which is fair enough. But also, it does make... We do need that clear point that they are outsiders here, don't we?
And they are outsiders.
And, and that helps us to see that when they talk about their papers and so on.
Yeah.
It helps to make it all very clear.
Yes, but they use very sophisticated language. They dialectics.
Yes, the language is the playwright's language, isn't it?
Because it's ideas, really.
Yes.
Although the characters are very vivid, aren't they? They're very vivid, but precisely that. It's not a naturalistic, it's not a series of soap opera fragments put together. Mm. It's a philosophical piece.
Yes.
But very funny.
Now, Frau Habersaat, who is the woman who goes around claiming to be the mother of murderers, partly because she is herself childless and lost a child. She actually says at one point, we'd all like to be innocent. Is that where the title comes from? Are we all searching to be innocent?
The title of the play is Unschuld, which means non-guilt. It doesn't actually mean innocence. Innocence implies purity, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Unschuld does not imply purity, it's just non-guilt.
That implies...
Yes, so that kind of non-guilt we all suffer from, don't we? When we pass poverty, when we pass homeless people, when we accept...
So lack of involvement with other
implicit,
human beings.
Yeah, that's what is meant. I mean, it's a different degrees of how implied we are in what happens.
Because one would wonder if some of those characters could actually even choose that much to be innocent or not. They seem to be the victims of circumstance, or...
Yes, of course, yes, yes. It's... although when I was talking to David Tushingham, who translated it very
yes,
well...
Yes, we ought to mention him, because it's a very good translation.
He's brilliant, and he understands all about German theatre. He also said, yes, that there is a kind of element of fall from grace in it, so innocence in a way is also applicable. So it's not only about conscience, but also fall from grace. Yeah. Frau Habesaat, interestingly, but that perhaps is not crucial, there is a play she wrote called Clara's Case, which was widely performed as well, and a character very similar, albeit young, very similar to Frau Habesaat, goes through, it's her story, also done in kind of loosely connected little pictures. And that is curiously very close to the author herself, who, I mean, her love of books, for obsession with books, that's her herself. You know, she grew up in a house where there wasn't...
This is Dea Loha, not one book. She grew up in the forest in Bavaria.
Her father was a forester. There wasn't one book in that pretty little house. There were only, she would find, as I mentioned, there, a head of a deer or shotguns and things. And she, she had a total identification with those kind of characters who had no speech. You know, like there are those characters in German mythology almost, you know, Kaspar and Wojciech, characters who are finding their language a way of connecting with the world, and language is kind of more than just a tool. And she really embraced literature as a way of explaining life, and then found it very disappointing that it didn't. Studied literature, then studied philosophy. It was really looking for answers. And maybe is it already a third generation of post-war Germans looking for an answer to the kind of dark skeletons in the cupboard? Oh, you know what I mean? Yeah. That maybe that. I don't know. Maybe I'm imposing that, but I feel all those layers what's hidden and what the younger generation is rebelling against.
Yes, one of the things that Frau Habesaat claims for this non-existent son is that he writes poetry. And as if that would weigh against any evil that might be in a person.
And also she has a total preoccupation. Her dream is, for instance, that she would run a mobile library and she would release all the books, like the books were birds, and then she says in the end, in a way, she would like to be a bird migrating. So that is Dea Loha, really. Very interesting. There are hints only. She doesn't ponder on it. You know,
yes. Well, you've said that it's poetic. I mean, are devices like addressing the audience directly and sometimes using the third person as if it's a story narrative and having a... Should I give it away? Someone in the audience who comes into the scene.
Yes. He wasn't actually written as being in the audience. Ah. So we just put him there.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So you've contributed quite a bit.
I just kind of went a little bit further with the ideas.
Actually, that role is quite extraneous to the rest of what's happening,
isn't
it?
Because it's full of stories.
He's a doctor.
Yes, he's somebody in the audience who talks about the suicides. Oh, I say in the audience, but there are several stories which are unconnected. There is... there is the chorus of the people who... Oh, well, she's in it, but then there are the people in the cars who encourage a suicide.
Someone to jump off a bridge, yes.
So it kind of tries to show...
Yes, that kind of thing has actually happened quite recently.
Has it?
Yes.
They encourage... It just shows how brutal people can become when in that situation.
And maybe how the line between fiction and reality, that people see so much on television, is a bit
and also people
vague.
And then those gunmen, people who suddenly go on a rampage and shoot. So it does try to show different stories. It doesn't try to concentrate on just one or two. It shows several and then the way they interlink or don't. And interestingly to me, it shows those mysterious connections, kind of almost like, when an object suddenly starts moving, like telepathic or connection, those mysterious, strange connections. And I thought, oh yes, maybe she's not so much 21st century as the turn of century when... And I noticed that, for instance, in the 20th, between 19th and 20th century, there was also that trend. Suddenly things started being, ghosts were coming out from. So maybe that's what she represents, a movement, a change between a kind of linear world and this new world in which we release our children not knowing where they're going. What's the technology going to bring? What sort of world? What sort of planet? Will there be a planet? We don't know anything about the future.
Yeah.
I mean, in the 20th century, up to, say, the Holocaust, or maybe even after, for a while we thought we knew what we were bringing our children, what kind of world we were bringing our children into, and we were bringing them up accordingly. But I don't think that in today's world we know what we're bringing them up for, do we?
No.
And that's really what I think she is, on the sort of brink between the two, the philosophy of the, which our theatre, and that's what she maintains, I think, that our theatre, the traditional theatre, the narrative theatre, is still keeping us in the illusion that there are storylines, that there is a narrative, that there is some sort of destiny.
That there's a logic to existence.
That there is a logic and cause and result. And there isn't, and we should look for different connections.
Yes. And yet, as soon as you make something into art, you are sort of making it...
Finding order. But she continually destroys it. And as the sort of embittered philosopher says, I cannot say meaning, I cannot say death, life. I can say shoe, chair, umbrella. You know, and then suddenly umbrella finds a mysterious connection, you know, there's an umbrella there which floats on the sea. So it's kind of mischievous like that.
Yes. Well, you've mentioned how bold you thought, before we started recording, actually, the Arcola had been to put this play on, because it has a large cast. And you have some quite elaborate effects where you have people going into the sea through a screen. And you have your umbrella going up.
What is admirable about it is not the technology that went into it, but the fact that the actress was prepared to walk naked into the sea in the middle of December.
In the middle of December, indeed.
Yeah.
And not once, but twice.
But she did, actually. It was filmed with her going into the sea.
Oh, I see. She was actually... Of course she would have had to do
in
that.
December.
Oh, my goodness.
That was amazing that she was prepared to do this. I just kind of said, that is this shot. And she said, I'll do it. And they went to Folkestone and they filmed it. And
my goodness.
She undressed and went.
I think she should get an award, especially for that.
She should. But it shows how actors, what a brilliant species, you know, actors. It's fantastic, fantastic. I think it is wrong that theatres which have funding and a brief to present international drama, like Royal Court, National Theatre as well, and say Gate, small as it is, their brief is to do international drama. They don't do it.
They
mostly are doing this really rather presumptuous messing around with classics, you know, reinventing, rewriting classics, which I think is a little bit, you know, I mean, there is so much more to do. And the national, I think, marginalized international drama by putting really very junior people in charge of it and doing it marginally in the studio, you know. I mean, I do think that there's so much happening, really. And sometimes a very great writer, I mean, they pass and they cease to be the new writing and they haven't even touched this show. Like Ian Fosse, for instance.
Ian Fosse, yes. He has been...
Yes,
done,
but
only in
because
French,
it didn't French, work, it didn't work, so people kind of said no.
Yeah.
But he's a major writer. And Cortez.
Yes, I've seen young people doing Jan Fosse's work, and they take to it very easily.
I know, but it should be done, and should be. So, and there are many, many others.
He's Norwegian, isn't he?
Yes.
Well, perhaps you'll start a revolution. Yeah.
No, I kind of think that it's wonderful that Arcola does it, you know,
that
is really admirable.
Yes.
Also, it's wonderful, I think, as it happens, this play, in my opinion, fits this environment. It kind of feels as if it belongs in Dalston, doesn't it?
Yes, and not in a proscenium arch.
No, and also you go outside and it's like an extension. You see people like
that's true, actually. Okay, well, I think perhaps we'll stop there. I should perhaps say that any noises off are caused by the fact that we are in the Arcola which upstairs still has a dress factory, so we are part of the real world,
yes,
even while we're recording.
Yes.
So thank you very much, Helena.
Wonderful questions. I really enjoyed that. It made me really think again about it. When you get involved, you kind of forget what this is about, what it was about.
Thank you.